Good evening. I'm Diana Talley, co-artistic director of this year's She Tells Sea Tales. Tonight, KPTZ and the Northwest Maritime Center are taking you to the 2023 presentation that was celebrated on March 4th of this year. The Northwest Maritime Center proudly produces She Tells Sea Tales to raise up the voices of women working at sea and on the waterfront, and to support the Northwest Maritime Center's programming for women and girls, including the Girls Boat Project, which connects young women with maritime skills. In order, we will hear the stories of women mariners Kathy Poole, Amanda Thieroff, Ashlyn Brown, Sarah Kolbeck, Inger Rankins, and Erica Lichty. The concluding 30 minutes of these 2 hours of She Tells Sea Tales will be the guitar artistry of Captain Ace Sprague and the community artistry of Chris Bricker of KPTZ's Our Working Waterfront. The show begins with the voice of my collaborator and co-artistic director, Kelly Watson, who is the heart and founder of She Tells Sea Tales.
My name is Kelly Watson, and I'm incredibly excited to be back here. The year the pandemic hit, this was the very first event to get canceled, and I alone, with Inger and Allison Demmert and a friend of Allison's, came here, and then we sat down and had this really sad little pathetic campfire down on the beach. But I am so grateful to all be back together in the same room. So I'll just share a couple thoughts on that. 9 years ago tonight, we had this first event for She Tells Sea Tales, and it was organized by Alicia Dominguez, Katie, whose last name I cannot remember, Kathleen Leperati, and myself. And it was a packed house and an unbelievably buoyant evening. Finn River Cider was donated to us, and the stories lasted until nearly 10 or 11, so you can thank us tonight when we don't stay that late. And then we drug those half-empty kegs back to my house, and there's only one of you in the room that was also at that party. We partied until 4 a.m., having the last best slumber party that I may ever have. Fast forward to tonight. And I feel like the before and after pictures of Barack Obama from his presidency. I look older, and honestly, this week, I feel older. It's easy to look in one light and see the progress that we've all made together. And in another light, there's so much progress still to be made. It appears that nothing at all has happened. In our own lives, we have all planted seeds. Some have grown up. Some are growing up, and some are lying dormant and deep in the soil. They are waiting for spring, for water to trickle through the clay and compost, for sunshine and warmth to break through the chrysalis and reveal the flower or the vegetable or the weed. Time really will tell. Throughout the 9 years since we started this event, I've watched young women from the audience watch the storytellers and then become them. And I see another one in the back that's about on her way. They're gonna buy boats, head north, catch and sell fish, start companies, and thrive. I've watched myself have a seed, plant it in this community, and watch as the Port Townsend Maritime Academy grew into reality and was then passed onward into capable hands. We never really know where we are going or just how long this voyage will be. Together does not mean rolling over to the dominant paradigm, giving power over to those that already have it, but rather seeking the common good, knowing that very little in our life and in our world is done separately, that we really are truly interconnected. So what is my point? As I prep for tonight, and by prepped I mean gave thought over the coming weeks and days leading up to me being here, I continue to reflect on two words, gratitude and fortitude. Gratitude for this community, for all of the people who make every moment in our lives happen, for family and friends, community, the land, the sea, the boat builders who keep the boat afloat so that in a storm we all have positive buoyancy, all of us. Fortitude, to put up with the assholes and storms, with the inevitable bumps and steep seas of life, to ground ourselves in our values, to pause and listen for our inner compass and to have the fortitude to carry on when things get tough, to ask for help in our community, and to persevere. We are all here to bear witness in our own way, from our own lens, both the fortitude and gratitude for each of tonight's storytellers who will be sharing a snapshot of their lives. We will all witness it, grounded in our own lives that are deeply, beautifully intertwined. And we don't really know where this experience will or won't take us. We are simply planting another seed that may or may not sprout into our futures. So thank you for being here. Thank you for being part of this community. Gratitude to the Northwest Maritime Center and their incredible team for taking on the Girls Boat Project, She Tells, Sea Tales, and many other truly meaningful programs in our community. Gratitude for Port Townsend and this remarkable and eclectic place. Gratitude for all the students I've had the honor of working with. Gratitude for the whole Argitas family and for all of our adorable dogs. Gratitude that Kathy Poole said yes. Yeah. And gratitude that we're about to get on with the evening. Our first reader, I'm very excited. I've asked Kathy Poole to read every year since we started this event. So I met Kathy up in Alaska at Tom's place, and she's like a legend to me. I pictured Kathy, she's a tenderman, and she was up on the fly bridge of her boat. She started fishing the year I was born. So I'm gonna read her bio here, but I'm just really very excited to have her join us tonight. So Kathy was raised on a Georgia coastal island. She has never been far from salt water. After graduating from college, she gravitated to Lopez Island, Washington, where her first employment was crewing on a gillnet boat in the Strait of Juan de Fuca. It was the summer sockeye season where the afternoon westerlies regularly blew. That night, she was so seasick that she decided this was her first and last trip. The owner of the boat promised if she returned for the next night's opening, she would not be sick. And he was correct, and she was hooked. Good for that guy. Her maritime career has spanned over 40 years, writing for a fishing publication, gillnetting for salmon, longlining for halibut, and buying gillnet fish. Now retired, Kathy's happy to not be hunkered down in an engine room, changing the oil, covered with soot from cleaning the oil stovepipe, nursing her wrist tendonitis after a long line trip, or laying on the gravel under a boat's keel scraping barnacles. She is, however, grateful for the over 40 round trips on the Inside Passage and is proud to boast that she could sleep between watches, wake up, look out the window, and know where the boat was. So please welcome Kathy Poole.
Well, this morning I woke up and I said, I'm not going to tell that story that I had been working on. I decided I needed to tell a fishing story because that's what I was, a fisherman. It was a dark and stormy night. I'm joking. It was dark. It was flat calm out on the water. 1978, I was really young. It was my first year gillnetting by myself. I was running a boat that was called the Douglas Mad. I was in the fishing down here in Puget Sound that year and not in Alaska. I headed up to Point Roberts for the fall chum salmon season. October, gets dark early. This was a nighttime fishery, no matter what time of the year. You could get your net in the water at 6 and you had to have it out by 6 a.m. in the morning. I went up there and put my net in the water, and everyone knows where Point Roberts is. I'm all the way up there. There aren't a lot of boats out because it's early in the chum season, so I have lots of room. I drift for a couple hours, and let's see what's in the net. Haul it. Well, it's really slow because it's early in the season, and I'm thinking, oh, I hope it's just early in the evening and change of tide, maybe I'll have some fish. I only had 6 chum salmon. So down in the fish hole they go. I look at what time it is. I check the tide table. I realize the tide has changed. It is ebbing. I can go all the way to the border of Canada, set right on the line, because that Fraser River is just always coming out and it's ebbing. So I'll be able to get a long set in, and I'm drifting the correct way and not into Canadian waters. I go right up to the line, throw the buoy bag out, head back, lay the net out. I'm going to have a good drift. I had been really careful where I set. I knew where the boundary line light was, and I had a radar, so I saw the coastline. And so I knew where I was, and I was knew I was safe. But I go out and check every once in a while and check the radar, and I'm drifting. And then suddenly I hear, "Skipper of the fishing vessel, you are fishing illegally in Canadian waters." And I'm going, "Oh, no, no, no. Please get on deck." So I go out, I go on deck, turn the lights on, and, you know, it's like, "Oh, my God. I can't see now. We are going to be boarding your boat. Prepare for our skiff with crew to come alongside, tie up, and board your boat." Okay, so they did that. There were three of them. They tied the boat up. Two of them got on board. One of them stayed. I had to stay out on deck while one of them had to watch me. I don't know what I was going to do. And the other one went down in the cabin and to toss the boat. Then it hits me. They're looking for drugs. I mean, it's 1978, okay? There was probably that going back and forth between the borders. They radio what they found, nothing in the cabin, no contraband. Six fish in the fish tank. They radio back and they say, "We're towing her in." So I had to haul the net. And what a haul. I had two more fish. So that's eight fish I have on board, okay? So, okay, it's a long, long night up the board, because what are we doing? We're bucking tide. We're bucking the river, the Fraser River coming out, and it takes forever. It takes forever going up the Fraser River. I don't think we even get past Stevenson very far. I mean, you just look to the left and right, the lights, and it's like, we're not going anywhere. But we did get there, tied me up. I hit the bunk, but I have my guards on board, right? They're out on deck all night long. I'm awake in the next morning, knock, 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 and it is Canadian customs. They're gonna come do exactly what the Coast Guard had done the night before. Toss my boat, look in the fish hole, couldn't find anything except my eight fish. Why did they say, "Oh, one, two, three," they could count them, that's why. Okay, so they take me to a van, they shuttle me up to court. I'm going to have charges read against me for fishing illegally in Canada. We go in, the building is like this nondescript brick building. It's pretty small, it's one story, but it says Stevenson Court. I go in, and it's underway. It's full of people. They make room for me and my entourage. I'm sitting there and I'm realizing, this is traffic court. They have brought me to traffic court for fishing illegally in Canadian waters. Our turn comes up. The representative, I don't know what department of Canadian bureaucracy he was from, he comes up and he hands paperwork to the judge, and he stands there and officially says, "We're charging her with this. And the judge looks at it and, you know, he looks at me, he eyes me, like, how old am I? I'm really, really young, and I'm a woman. He says, "Well, what do you have to say about this?" I said, "Well, I was not fishing illegally in Canadian waters. I was not over the border." So he looks back at the other guy, and then he looks back at me and says, "Well, can you explain that?" And I said, "Well, okay, the whole thing, I'm not going to repeat that. The radar, the light, the stage of the tides, everything, just monitoring everything." And he looks back at the other guy, looks back at me, and I say, "Hey, it's his word against mine, yeah. Why don't you ask him if he can prove it?" Yeah, I had a lot of faith in myself. No one ever accused me of being a BSer either, of course. The other guy murmured something, and the judge looked at me and says, "This case is dismissed. You just dropped the charges." I mean, it was was like, he's looking at it, and I'm sure he's looking at it and saying, oh, they confiscated eight fish. So anyway, we have to go back to the boat because I have no other way back. We go down there, and they have to go get the fish because they haven't taken them off the boat. And I won't let them, and they say, okay, these my guards are just like, oh, this whole thing is ridiculous. We're wasting our time. I get on the boat, I start the engine, and they're just still hanging out, ready to throw the lines off, and this guy's running down the dock. And he's got one of those reporter's notebooks. You know what they look like? You know, they're like this long, and they're about that wide, so you can hold it here. I don't know, maybe they still use them. I have no idea, but I doubt it. He's coming up. I need to ask her some questions. And they realize, I realize, this guy's a reporter because of this. And they say, please hold back, sir. They pull out their radio. They call the boss for... Then I realized what's going on, and I realized what was happening in traffic court. There is this thing between the Canadians and the Americans on either border, the northern border and the southern border, over here in the Pacific Northwest. And yes, occasionally there is people over the line, probably accidentally, probably weather conditions. It happens up north, and I guess it happens down here, because I hadn't heard about this before down here, but I did up there. And, you know, the newspapers, I love to splash that. And these two governments, the Coast Guards, they just go back and forth. My turn, your turn. You know, they're trying to bust somebody. You busted my guy, I'm going to go bust yours. He got off the radio. Yes, sir. He said, please leave. I'll untie your lines. And he did, and I was glad, because I've been a reporter. I write the news, I read the news. I didn't want to be in the news. But with this reporter from the Vancouver Sun, and they were afraid I was gonna like tell them about traffic court. The reason why I didn't make an issue is because I did not want to be in the news, because I knew the only thing anybody reading would remember is what?
Eight fish.
Thank you, everyone.
That was worth waiting for, so thank you. Oh, this is like... Okay. Thank you very much, Kathy Poole. Another round of applause for Kathy. Next up is Amanda Thieroff, who's a culinary artist, a farmer, an outdoor educator, an adventurer, originally hailing from New York City. She got her start sailing and making music on the Clearwater with Pete Seeger, and went on to sail the schooner Adventuress and Lady Washington before cruising the Inside Passage to Southeast Alaska aboard the motor vessel Delphinus. She has worked several seasons teaching seventh graders how to longboat with the Northwest Maritime Center. Amanda currently lives in Port Townsend with her very adorable dog, Finley, where she peddles her homemade vegan ice cream, Fiddlehead Creamery. Anybody had it? You should go try. You can buy it at the co-op or come to the farmer's market. This summer, grows vegetables and hikes in her spare time, and we're very excited to have you up here.
Who knew you could be so cold and sweaty at the same time? I'm in the galley, bracing myself against the counter because the boat is heeled way over. Reaching across to stir a stove on the pot. Nope. To stir a pot on the stove. When I hear a commotion up on deck. Thank you very much. We're sailing in heavy winds off the coast of California. And Richard, the guy that has been trying for 4 days to catch a fish, has finally caught a fish. Oh, no. This is the moment that I've secretly been dreading ever since I accepted this job as a chef aboard the sailing yacht Runaway. The moment my employers would discover that I'm not a real chef, and I actually don't really know what I'm doing. I'm going to have to figure out what to do with this fish. I've never processed a fish before. And alas, we've sailed away from cell service and the sweet, nurturing bosom of YouTube. Sure, I'd been a ship's cook before, preparing large vats of food for hungry tall ship sailors who spent their days in the wind hauling on lines and wrangling children. But this was different. Tall ship sailors eat burritos and lasagna and macaroni and cheese. They do not eat fresh caught mahi-mahi. But after nearly 2 years of pandemic loneliness, baking sourdough loaves while binge watching Below Deck, I had jumped at the chance to get back out on a boat and go on a real adventure. The Runaway was joining the cruising regatta known as the Baja Ha Ha. I really hate that name. I'm not gonna say it again. That's the last time. The crew was gonna be me, the quote-unquote chef, Captain Pete, Chief Mate Emma, the Runaway's owners, Lowell and Julie, and a few of their friends. Right away, our crew felt sort of like a little family. Pete and Emma and I were the kids, standing in for Lowell and Julie's own children who weren't able to or didn't want to go out sailing with their parents. We were like their rented children. and they were our parents, taking us on a trip that our real parents could never take us on. It was a job, but it was nice. And the Runaway was a beautiful boat, a Hylas 70, a fast, sleek cruising yacht with furling sails and the winches, my God, the winches. Coming from tall ships, this was some real luxury. The galley had marble countertops, a dishwasher, and an ice machine. Yeah. On deck, I hear folks shouting and scampering around. Julie runs down to the galley. Richard caught a fish. We need vodka to pour into its gills. She goes into the liquor cabinet and grabs a bottle of Grey Goose and heads back up the companionway. There was only one shelf on this boat, and it was the top one. I turn the burner off on the stove and head up on deck to see what's going on. Lowell's at the helm, keeping the boat on a steady course. He's focused, the kind of guy that delights in picking up a fraction of a knot wherever he can. Pete and Emma are wrangling the spinnaker on the foredeck. And meanwhile, the back deck looks like a crime scene. Call CSU, blood everywhere. The fish on Richard's line is flopping frantically all over the deck while he and Julie are trying to pin down its slippery body with their hands. It hasn't been gaffed or bludgeoned, but it does have Richard's hook in its mouth, the other end grotesquely protruding through one of its eyes. I'm telling you, this was a real horror scene. What had I gotten myself into? I thought about backing away slowly, laying back into the galley to stir my pot and announce, "Your vegan lunch is ready," when the time came. I wanted to go back to the tall ship Clearwater where my sea life had started, singing Pete Seeger songs about animals being our friends. But my shipmates clearly needed assistance. Pete and Emma came back and helped hold the fish down, and I rested a hand on its powerful dorsal fin. Its body was like one big slippery muscle, the color of the Pacific, blue and green and shimmering. It took all of us to ultimately overpower it. Pete poured the vodka into its gills, and eventually it stopped moving, and Emma hosed the blood off the deck. Then Richard turned to me. "So, what are you gonna make with it?" His smile so excited, so expectant. "Oh, we'll see," I said. So many good options. But what options? I miss you, sweet, sweet internet, with all of your recipe ideas. I was going to have to figure something out. First, Richard wanted a photo of him with the fish for his girlfriend back home. He unhooked his very phallic fishing belt and hung it back on the rail. The whole thing put me in mind of all the Tinder profiles I'd seen of men holding fish, presenting them to the camera. Look at what I caught for you. Displaying their dominion over this thing that they had conquered. Swipe left. Swipe left. Swipe left. Richard held up his fish with its one winking eye. Mad eye mahi. Smile for the photo. Back in the galley, our vegan lunch was indeed ready. I had prepared some fresh pita bread, hummus with chickpeas, dusted with smoked paprika and parsley, stuffed grape leaves, lentils and rice with toasted cumin and mustard seeds and crispy fried onions. The spread was as beautiful as it was delicious. I used to think that film was the ultimate art form because of all the senses that it engages. But food is like a film that you can eat in the end. It engages all of your senses, taste, smell, sight, touch, and it also nourishes you and brings you together with other people. It wasn't an accident that when the pandemic shut down so much of our lives and we were all locked away in our separate homes, we turned collectively to baking bread as a way to stay human. The feel of the dough in our hands, the smell of warm bread baking in an oven. Bread is life. The term breaking bread synonymous with spending time with other people. I arranged the plates on the table in the main cabin and snapped a few photos for my Instagram because I'm basic like that. It was then that Mad Eye Mahi came down to join me. Richard had hosed him off and some of his aquatic coloring had faded. He still looked at me, cockeyed. Shall I put him in the sink? Yes, Richard, you shall. We put him on ice in a big bowl, and I vowed I would attend to him just as soon as everyone else was engaged and no one was looking at me. My alter ego is a chef in a white coat with tattoos of big knives on her forearms. Her name is Roxy, and she graduated from Le Cordon Bleu and has hot pink bangs and knuckle tattoos that say sous vide. I channel Roxy when I come face to face with Mad Eye Mahi in my sink. Okay, I've seen fish fillets in the market before. Somewhere inside of this fish is that fish fillet. But where? I pick him up, Mad Eye, and I spin him around, appraising him. Are there like organs I need to remove, I wonder? Is there a section of him that's a delicacy that I absolutely should not cut into? I hover over him with my sharpest knife. And just then, Julie pops her head into the galley, and I drop the knife like I've been caught about to experiment on the family dog. Can we get some margaritas, Julie asks? Ooh, be careful with that knife. Yes, Julie, margaritas. Margaritas, I know. One part tequila, one part Cointreau, one part lime. I'm grateful for the distraction. Meanwhile, the wind gusts and the boat lurches to port, Mad-Eye shifting in his ice bath with an ominous clink, clink, like a cocktail being stirred. Go ahead. Chop his head off. It's Roxy. One fell swoop. Whoosh! I pull a meat cleaver off of the magnetic knife strip. Yay ho, little fish, don't cry, don't cry. I pick up the cleaver and bring it down hard on, what is it, his neck? This is so disgusting. I'm running cool water over Mad-Eye's severed body, watching blood run down the drain when Emma pops down. You okay, buddy? I pull her into the galley, and in a hushed whisper, I frantically spit out, I don't know what I'm doing. I've never done this before. I'm freaking out. This is so gross. Is it supposed to look like that? Is it full of parasites? My knives are all dull, and I'm really more of a bean chef, and I meant to watch more YouTube videos about this before we left port, but I got distracted watching videos of dogs and ducklings that are best friends, and now here we are. Okay, she says, take a deep breath. You know what people did when they needed to learn something before the internet? They read books. Ah, yes, of course, books. On the shelf in the galley is the honored tome, The Joy of Cooking, the all-purpose cookbook with over 4,500 recipes and 1,000 informative illustrations. We flip through the index looking for how to process meat, and it's got everything, including rabbit, opossum, and squirrel. I'll squirrel that knowledge away for later. Thank you very much. We find the section on fish, and I read that I'm to insert my knife just behind the gills until it's flush with the backbone, then turn it flat and slide the knife from gills to tail. Ideally, my knife would be sharper, but it's working, especially since Emma helps me to steady the fish on the cutting board and cheers me on. Look, dude, that's a fillet. We flip it over onto the counter, and it is indeed a fillet. Thank you. It's a little choppy from the less than perfect knife work, but it is an entirely passable fish fillet. Nice job, Roxy. I put it back on ice in the sink, and we flip Mad-Eye over to repeat the process on the other side. His backbone removed, his little fishy organs stowed away for fish stock. We remove the fillets from the skin and head up on deck to toss the skin overboard, returning it to the sea. Thank you, fish, we yell into the wind. Now, how to prepare this special catch? With a cream sauce and chopped roasted nuts? Seared rare with a pineapple glaze? We will have enough from this one life, this one fish, for several meals to feed and nourish and delight everyone on board. Emma tells me we can cook the fish by squeezing lime juice over it until the flesh changes color, and in this way we can eat the fish raw, straight from the sea and into our bodies. Emma's an experienced sailor who's lived a life of adventure that I dream of, and has also become a dear friend and shipmate on this trip, so I trust her knowledge. I mean, I have to, since I can't do my own research on the internet anyway. I cut the fish into bite-sized cubes, and we squeeze lime juice over them and stir them around. The flesh starts to change from a pale pink to white. And then I can see it, the meal we will have. Poke bowls, each colorfully arranged like an artist's palette. I prepare brown rice and sprinkle it with chopped nori and sesame seeds. I cut sticks of carrots and cucumbers and radishes. I make Hawaiian mac salad with its sweet and creamy and tangy dressing. I fan slices of avocado across each bowl. At center stage will be our fish, old Mad-Eye Mahi, who'd been so resplendent swimming through the water, now tossed in a sriracha lime mayo, perched atop a bed of vegetables and grains. I take a bite of the fish, figuring I should be the one to die first if that's how this is all going to go. But it's delicious. So light and fresh, the cool sea salt limey flavor is like the sun and the sea were folded down and packed into this morsel of food and transported into my body. Its flesh becomes my flesh. Eyes closed, I thank the fish again, and my shipmates for their help, and the boat that got us out here, out in the ocean off the coast where we can't even see the land anymore. I'm so grateful to be out here. It wasn't long ago that I worried I wouldn't be able to do something like this ever again, that we'd all have to live alone in our separate homes forever, eating our separate loaves of bread, communicating only on screens. I'm so grateful to be here, to share this singular moment with these people, and to be able to care for them, make art for them, feed them. I craft the poke bowls, drizzle them with sriracha, and accompany each with a pair of wooden chopsticks, arranging them on the table in the main cabin. Dinner's ready, I say. And then I take a picture for my Instagram, because I'm basic like that. Thank you.
So good, thank you. So you should definitely try your ice cream.
Clearly.